Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Stone Age Economics by Marshall Solins is a landmark work of economic anthropology, first published in the 1970s and later issued in Routledge Classics. It is not a conventional economics text, but a collection of essays that examine how human societies organize production, exchange, and subsistence under very different cultural conditions from modern market economies. Solins is best known here for arguing against the assumption that hunter-gatherers lived in perpetual poverty or scarcity. Instead, he presents them as the original affluent society because their material wants were limited, and their social arrangements often allowed for substantial leisure. The book's larger purpose is to show that economic behavior cannot be understood apart from kinship, reciprocity, redistribution, and symbolic life. By challenging formal economic models and Western ideas of progress, the book asks readers to rethink what counts as wealth, efficiency, and human well-being. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the original affluent society and the critique of prehistoric scarcity. One of the book's most famous contributions is its reversal of the usual image of hunter-gatherers as destitute survivors. Solins argues that many foraging societies were affluent not because they produced large surpluses, but because they had modest needs and did not organize life around endless accumulation. This distinction is central affluence is redefined as satisfaction of limited wants, rather than maximization of output. That argument challenges modern economic common sense, which tends to measure prosperity by productivity, consumption, and growth. Solins uses ethnographic comparisons to suggest that low material pressure and flexible subsistence strategies could yield more free time than industrial life. The point is, not that such societies were problem-free, but that the standard narrative of primitive hardship is too simple. He thereby shifts the question from how much people had to how economic expectations are culturally produced and socially managed. Secondly, reciprocity, redistribution, and the social logic of exchange, the book pays close attention to how goods move through society, especially through reciprocity and redistribution rather than impersonal market exchange. Solins shows that exchange is often governed by social relationship, obligation, and mutual recognition, not by abstract price calculation. This matters because it explains why gifts, sharing, and return obligations can stabilize communities in ways markets do not. Reciprocity is not treated as a vague moral ideal. It is an organizing principle that differs according to distance and social closeness, ranging from general sharing among kin to more balanced exchange between equals. Redistribution, meanwhile, places goods in the hands of a central figure or institution before they are circulated back to the group, linking economic flow to political authority and social cohesion. Solins uses these patterns to argue that exchange systems are embedded in kinship and status. The larger implication is that economic transactions always carry social meaning, so they cannot be reduced to detached self-interest. Thirdly, domestic production and the household as the center of economic life. Another major theme is the role of the household in organizing production. Solins describes many small-scale societies in which economic activity is not separated from domestic life in the way it is in modern capitalism. Instead of a labor market or firm-based economy, the family household often functions as the main site where work is allocated, needs are assessed, and production is directed. This means that decisions about labor are tied to kinship, food sharing, and everyday domestic obligations. Solins uses this to question the assumption that economies naturally evolve towards specialized, autonomous production systems. In his view, domestic production for livelihood is not a primitive leftover but a coherent social arrangement with its own logic. It also explains why economic behavior in such settings cannot be understood through individual gain alone. People work within a relational structure where the purpose of production is often immediate household maintenance rather than expansion. This focus helps reveal how social organization shapes material life at the most basic level. Fourthly, substantivist economics versus formalist assumptions about rational choice. Stone Age economics is also a major intervention in the debate between substantivist and formalist approaches to economic anthropology. Solins sides with substantivism, which holds that economic activity must be understood within cultural and social institutions, rather than through universal assumptions about rational calculation. This position rejects the idea that all humans are basically market actors responding to scarcity in the same way. Instead, Solins argues that production and distribution are embedded in social rules, moral expectations, and culturally defined roles. That makes the book important not only as ethnography, but also as a critique of economics as a discipline. Solins does not deny that people make choices, but he disputes the claim that choice is always governed by the same instrumental logic. His essays therefore expose the limits of applying modern market categories to tribal or subsistence societies. The result is a broader concept of economy, one that includes politics, kinship, and religion as conditions of material life, rather than treating them as external influences. Lastly, the political force of rethinking progress, development, and human well-being. Beyond its technical anthropology, the book is a strong critique of modern ideas of progress. Salins suggests that industrial affluence does not automatically produce better lives, and that subsistence societies may in some respects have been healthier, less pressured, and more socially integrated. This is a controversial argument, but its importance lies in the challenge it poses to linear narratives of history. The book invites readers to question whether technological development should be treated as a simple measure of human improvement. It also has lasting relevance for debates about sustainability, degrowth, and alternative economic futures, because it shows that human flourishing can be organized around different priorities than accumulation and expansion. At the same time, the book is careful enough to remain comparative rather than romantic in a simplistic way. Its deeper political force is intellectual. It breaks the assumption that modern capitalism represents the natural endpoint of human economic evolution. By doing so, it opens conceptual space for imagining other forms of social organization. In conclusion, Stone Age Economics should be read by students and scholars of anthropology, economic history, sociology, and political theory, as well as general readers interested in alternatives to market-centered thinking. Its main value is not as a manual for practical economics, but as a conceptual challenge to familiar assumptions about scarcity, rationality, and development. Readers will gain a clearer sense of how exchange systems are shaped by kinship, obligation, and symbolic meaning, and why small-scale societies cannot be judged fairly by industrial standards. The book is especially useful for anyone trying to understand why economic anthropology matters as a critique of universalizing market logic. Compared with similar works, it stands out because it is both theoretically influential and historically provocative. It combines close ethnographic reasoning with a sweeping argument about human affluence and social life. That combination has made it a classic. Even when readers disagree with Salins, the book is valuable because it forces them to define what they mean by wealth, efficiency, and well-being in the first place. If you would like to support Marshall Salins, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.